Today's sponsor is Audible. With an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more, get your free audiobook with a 30-day trial at www.audible.com/try now. Welcome to Failing Up, a podcast where we explore failure.
Why we're afraid of it, why we try to avoid it, and the success that can arise directly from it.
Failure comes in many shapes and forms. It can even mean different things to different people.
This show, Failing Up, intends to explore all aspects. These are the stories of people who have experienced profound failures that ultimately led them to something positive.
We hope this helps us all learn and grow. Thanks for listening.
My name is Eden.
And I'm Guy. She's a writer, comedian, journalist, actress, YouTuber, and sometimes Postmates courier. Please welcome Gabby Dunn. Gabby, thank you for being here.
That's right. From my website.
It is. Well, I've listened to your podcast.
He's a very good website regurgitator.
Is it actually on the website too? I listened to the podcast to get that.
But you don't
mention podcaster at that point.
No,
is
weirdly.
That not cool, or?
I don't know. I just recently had something where I described myself as a podcast host, but I hadn't. It was new because I'm only like 10 episodes in to the podcast. So I had it lumped in with like entertainment. Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't doing it like as its own thing.
So is that going to be part of the,
the bio? How many more things can I add?
I think as many as possible. That should be like 3 minutes long of all the things that you do.
Yeah.
As you add them up.
YouTuber, usually like YouTuber encompasses a lot of those, but I also think sometimes people hear YouTuber and are like, I got to go.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll parse it out.
I think it's a smart way to do it.
Thanks. And they might also hear podcast host and be like, you know what? Never mind.
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's funny. So let's start at the beginning with you. That's how we like to start here on Failing Up. You grew up in Florida, correct?
Yeah. Damn. Look at you with your research.
Oh my God.
We have our research down.
Yeah. And
it's scary.
Your family was like, you wouldn't call your family rich.
No.
Would you call your family poor?
No, but like middle class-ish, but also sort of like a mess. So like middle class in the sense that like we're not holding on to anything and we're not like, I mean, I talk about it on the podcast. I know like the un-PC term is white trash, but like sort of like...
No stability, really? Like unsure,
I mean,
about...
Yeah, well, like we talk about it on the show, but my dad was an active addict and alcoholic until I was like 17 and until I was 15, then again relapsed, and then again when I was 17, and then has been sober like 11 years. And so he was sort of like, you know, in and out of jobs and always sort of in trouble and figuring his shit out. And then my mom was an attorney, but she worked for herself. So she was a divorced child custody attorney with her own practice. So everything that she did was like, She had no salary. It was all like getting paid for what she was doing. And then she would do this. She's a very lovely, very sweet, very giving person. But she would do this thing where she would like barter instead of get paid. So she did a lot of stuff about like, you know.
My mom used to do that too.
And all your haircuts are free, girls, because I did this guy's whatever. Or like, and then on the show, I was like, well, how many haircuts equals a divorce? And she was like, oh, I'll never make that money back. And it's like, well... Yeah, so like my, you know, childhood furniture came from her getting stuff for free, or like it was always kind of like a weird hustle.
I realized, I was just thinking about this the other day, I was talking to my friend about Pogs, because they were really popular when
I was a kid. Oh yeah, me too.
And I never purchased them, my mom got them for free, and I realized, holy crap, half the toys I had were because my parents got them for free for something.
Right,
and they were like, here, just play with this. And I was like, there's just coasters. Like, yeah, just stack them up. It's fun.
I remember a lot of garage sales. And like weird, either like us going to them to get stuff or us like throwing garage sales like a lot. And then people, I have this like thing where like I have this weird memory of this kid playing with a doll of mine and being like, it's kind of broken. And my mom just being like, you just take it. Like, not like, just like, I don't know, $2 or whatever. And like a lot of like VHS tapes would go missing. And I'm like, they were in a garage sale. Like, just kind of like, but then now I sort of have this weird nostalgia for them where I'll see one advertised and I'll be like, well, I gotta stop at that.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
You don't have to stop at that garage sale.
No.
Everything has bed bugs, but it's fine.
I know.
You kind of describe your parents as hippies in a sense.
Yeah, very. I mean, my dad grew up Yeah, my dad grew up very hippy dippy, very flower child, traveled around Europe in a van, grew out his hair, was like typical sort of baby boomer type dude. And my mom was more of a square, but she also, she, and like, I don't know, when it's always weird, I try to ask them like how they, when they met, how they liked each other, because they seem so different. But I don't know, they never split up the whole time he was an addict or anything. Like, they never, like, it was, people were like, oh, they must have like fought a lot. Not really. Like,
wow.
I don't know if it's because she's a super enabler or what, but it was never, I mean, there was like one time where she was like, pack your bags, we're leaving, and then we never left. But like, it was never like, and we're actually going to leave. It was mm-hmm. always like the threat of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yeah, it was like, and then now that he's sober, they're like, they only started fighting, Psych said this before, but they only started fighting when he got sober because she liked making all the decisions for the household. And all of a sudden he had an opinion and she was like, oh, I got to listen to this dude now.
Sobriety brings up opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of a sudden he was like involved in our lives. And then she was like, that's no, I don't like this.
Right, right. It's interfering with her decisions.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
When you're growing up, did you feel like you were in a different kind of household? Did you recognize that at all?
Only in the sense that like the other kids, I went to a private school on this academic scholarship, and a lot of the kids there had jewelry. Like, we had school uniforms, but a lot of the kids there had jewelry that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. Or bar mitzvahs were a big thing, like, yeah, just huge. And it's South Florida, so like people were like renting out yachts or nightclubs or like throwing these huge lavish bar mitzvahs. And mine was like, my parents, like my mom turned in a lot of favors, I think, and got like the flowers for free or whatever. But like mine was great and like pretty big, but it wasn't like we're renting out the top floor of a hotel for you and your friends big.
Mine was so cheap. Like, we had a friend that lived in like one of those gated communities, mm-hmm. and you could use that clubhouse for parties.
Yeah.
We used that clubhouse for parties, and it wasn't even ours.
My parents brought video games, like stand-up video games, into my house. So we had like 6 or 8 video games.
That's kind of neat.
And that was my
bar mitzvah
party.
That's awkward. How many kids were you allowed to have?
I think there were like maybe like 20 or 30, something like that. Yeah. I mean, all my friends had like the hall itself, I remember, was like $20,000
right,
to rent.
Exactly. And
yeah, my parents didn't do that.
Yeah, my parents didn't.
And that was the worst like class system, like where everyone in school just like knew where you were at with money because of where your bar mitzvah was and what they had.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I remember I was just going through my old, my grandma's, because she died recently. I was going through her old tapes, and my dad used to tape everything. And I looked at a 7th birthday of mine, and I was looking at it, and my mom was telling people, oh, like the kids were like, oh, open the presents. My mom was like, no, we're not opening presents. And then I remember, oh yeah, my mom had the strict rule never to open presents
at the party,
because she remembers that when she was a kid, like her friend opened up presents and like the kids made fun of the girl that didn't have money and gave like something homemade.
Oh,
so she didn't want other people to judge other girls, like, mm-hmm. oh, well, she got this doll from this person, which is like expensive. So my mom was really, really protective of that. And she knew that a lot of people in my school were either really rich or really poor. Mm-hmm. So, which I thought was so interesting and clever of her. So
it was just like, it became like this weird competition between all the kids where like, there's no reason why a 13-year-old should have a party at like lit nightclub in Miami.
Oh yeah.
Like where they've rented out the nightclub, and there's like, I mean, also I wonder how much of it was like for the parents, right? Where it's just like
100% for the parents.
Oh yeah, this vodka swan slide is like definitely for this 13-year-old. Like, no, it's not.
And how like stupid is it if you're like a kid thinking like, well, the kid with the swan, you know, vodka thing, that kid is a good kid. Like, nothing to do with the kid at all.
They didn't earn that money. What kind of gifts they gave out and everybody had, there was like a phase where everybody had the heart-shaped Tiffany bracelet.
Oh, I remember those.
And like I had a knockoff one. Like,
I did
too. You know
too.
What I mean? Like just that kind of
the
stuff.
The $12 one, like, from Claire's. Yeah.
Seems like this isn't good for me, but yeah. Or hair straightening. There was like I'm Jewish, so like there was a period where all the girls got nose jobs, all the girls got their hair chemically straightened. I never had either of those things.
Yeah, my hair was naturally straight. I curled it.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, mine was naturally straight. I was lucky.
Are you even Jewish?
I don't know. My mom had a Jew fro to the, like, people thought she was black. It was so like fro-y, but no, for some reason my hair's straight.
That's funny.
Not to compare hardships or not that any of these are hard. I know, well, that whole thing. But no, I was thinking about my birthday parties. And one of the things my I just realized my parents, you know, did some cheap shit. Like,
oh, yeah.
One of the things they would do is they would slice slice up some lemons and then give it to the kids on tape.
What?
So they would tape a kid, go up, bite into a lemon, and then the kid would make a face.
Right.
And then we'd all sit and watch back everybody's faces.
That was entertainment for
that
them?
That was my birthday party. That was like the
like
big
the early
thing.
Viral video. Like Vine before Vine.
Yeah. They were ahead of their time. But
or yeah, they just didn't have money to buy marshmallows, play exactly. Chubby Bunny or
lemons.
Something.
Lemons. I'm like, that's what my birthday was? Lemons? Jesus Christ.
They invented a game.
That's awful. Thanks, Mom and Dad. So you confronted your mom and dad on your very first podcast.
The first episode. Yeah, I interviewed them. They cut the part, though. Confronted's funny. Yeah, they cut the part where my dad, I was like, can I talk to, or I talked to my dad first, then I talked to my mom. Then my dad got back on the phone and went, did you get what you needed, Gabrielle?
Oh, like, no.
I was like, this wasn't like a, you know, an attack. And he was like, it just seemed like you had a lot of pressing questions. But like they are happy to be. The other thing that is in the podcast is that of course I like ask them all these very pointed questions, and then at the end of it my mom just goes, thank you for including us.
I know, I loved that part. I was
oh my god.
Well, you know, it's cool because it kind of reminds you, oh yeah, these people are still your parents and they still love you and the best interest is at heart.
They're just happy to be talked about. Like they don't care. Like they're like, they don't care if it's good or bad. They're just like happy to be involved in any way. And like are just like happy to be, it's like this funny sort of like they like being a character or characters in like my life or in if we have like an episode of the YouTube channel and we use their names, like they love it. Like they're just, I think there's an episode coming up with both of our moms. We talk about both of our moms and I wonder, and my comedy partner thinks that her mom's going to be embarrassed because she talks about her being like very overprotective and very like over, like very intense person. And I'm like, my mom's going to be embarrassed because I'm sort of like all the questions that we answer. I'm sort of like, she was like fine. Like, didn't care. She like handed me the bot. Like, and so I was like, I think mine will be embarrassed. And it was like, I don't know. Like everyone, like I think they're just all happy to be talked about, even though it's like there's no right way to have done it. We're alive. We ended up where we are.
Yeah, I mean,
we made it.
Yeah.
So there's no awkwardness afterwards. I mean, other than them saying, what
I do kind of want though a B-roll of like this of your podcast of like the stuff that gets cut out.
I mean, it was all in there. She did the. My mom did the thing I knew she was going to do, which was immediately go into like, oh, so you had a terrible childhood.
I know.
I should have left you on a hill
to
die.
Such a Jewy thing to do. Yeah,
yeah, immediately. Oh,
this is the
Holocaust. Were you just? Yeah, right. Like, you just were starving and sad all the time. I guess you should have had a better mother, like that kind of like thing.
Yeah.
And then I have to go, oh my god, it's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, totally.
So, how did you end up going from Florida out to Los Angeles here?
And was there any in between?
Yeah, I went to school in Boston at Emerson and studied journalism, and I wanted to be like a newspaper reporter. So I worked for this college newspaper and I worked for the Boston Globe in a co-op program where I went to school part-time and worked for the Globe part-time and was a reporter, and then went to New York.
Wait, let's not gloss over that, the reporter thing. You did like a crime beat, right?
Yeah, it was a news reporter, crime news reporter, yeah.
Was it like, it was weird hours as well, if I recall now?
Like 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. every day, yeah, for a couple of years.
And essentially you sat in front of a police scanner.
Mm-hmm.
And just listened, and then you're like, oh, I want to go to that.
I was like 19, which I think that's how they got away with that. Mm-hmm. Like they were just like, yeah, call it an internship. Send the 19-year-old out to the shitty.
19-year-olds can hack it.
And then you would just go out to what, like a murderer and be like, hey, can I talk to somebody?
Mm-hmm.
You would just try to find somebody to talk to.
There was, if there was a shooting somewhere, I would hear about it on the police scanner. And then I would go out to the site of the shooting. And then I would have to knock on doors until I found the family. Or until I found somebody who had seen something. Oh, yeah. Try to find the mother. Try to find the... Yeah. Like,
holy crap.
Yeah. Like the person that in every Ben Affleck movie, the family goes like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Like that person. It is crushing. It's a crushing job. It's very... like you either have to be dead inside or like you have to just, I don't know.
It's kind of like George Clooney's job in Up in the Air where he has to fire people.
Yes.
It's crushing like
yes,
that.
Yes, like that. Know? Like definitely, I mean, there were right after people died, I had to call them or go to their houses or like call their families. There was like instances where they would say like, well, you gotta give it, you know, an hour so the cops get there first and then call just so that you're not the one telling them that their like kid died. Like it's like, it's very, yeah, it's dark. And there was a lot of like, I did the obituaries for a while. Mm-hmm. So that those people, it was interesting because their family member had died and it was like, well, but they kind of knew that you were going to call or they expected that you would call. So it was, those were actually, I was worried about those, but those are actually nice because they want to hear from you because they want to make sure the article about their loved one is good.
Right, right.
So they'll talk to you forever. So you just end up like on the phone with this person's kid talking about the mom for like an hour to write this piece about the mom. And that's like really insane because you have to be like, okay, what do I want to lead with? What did they think was the most important thing about this person?
Right.
And you like really, I mean, my favorite part of all of it was like doing the interviews and like talking to the people. The actual sitting down to write, I would go like, how do I parse all of this information? It's like so much. And you have to figure out like, one thing someone told me was like, if you hang up the phone from the interview and then you are immediately to turn to your best friend and tell them what just happened, like what's the first thing you would say?
Mm.
So then you go, okay, I would start with this person was like when they were a kid, they were like a star equestrian or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I go, okay, that's what stuck out to me. So that's what'll go first.
Right.
But you're taking like a whole life, a person's whole life.
It's hard.
And just like parsing it down into like 500 words.
Yeah, 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 totally.
It was weird. It was really weird.
Here's something really weird with me that I realized I haven't done and I should do. So like the marker when someone dies, like you have to say something about them. Like,
yeah, yeah.
On Twitter, everybody jokes like this is what you want people to say on mine.
Right.
So I haven't done mine for my dad yet.
Oh.
So it's still just like a piece of paper where he's buried.
Huh.
With his name and and it's been 4 years and it's like I haven't done it yet. I just haven't thought of anything.
Oh, you didn't get the stone?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm just like really lazy and I just like every year I'm like I don't want to think about it. Like,
I mean, you could go with the classic like dad, husband, you know. What you're like hack.
I know. I feel like
it's boring.
I was there for my other friend's mom died recently at the same cemetery because all the Jews are buried in LA, the same cemetery. And so I was just like looking at the other ones like, oh, that's clever. Like,
yeah.
Judging that.
Why don't you just steal the best of like go around a cemetery
that's
and
so
steal the
hack.
Best. Be like, oh,
I'm a really writer. Like I can't do that.
Oh, yeah. You're a writer. Creative. There's a lot of pressure. That you got to think creative. Of something good.
Yeah. I was honestly just like thinking I should like go look at like old videos and see what my dad used to say and just
use
one of his sayings.
Or how he would sign things or how he would write stuff.
I know how
maybe.
He would sign things. It was just his name and because I used to forge it all the fucking time. But I it's like that it always struck me as very strange having to pick something from someone who's dead. Like and they can't really decide.
Yeah.
We have to do it for them sort of thing, which is so strange. And they can't even appreciate it.
That's why people always just go with like mother, daughter.
Yeah, it's a
gardener.
Placeholder.
Why
for...
Why did I say gardener? Nobody would put that.
No, I would have put that for my mom.
Yeah.
She was
she
a big gardener.
A gardener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does she have one? Does she have a stone?
She actually does because she died in 2000 and my dad was alive and way more
and
on top of
it?
Things.
And he did it?
Well, actually, her twin brother kind of took over because she's buried in Israel.
Oh.
So he lives there and he kind of took over that.
Oh, so your mom's buried in Israel and your dad's buried here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, otherwise I would have thought, I just thought of maybe like I'm with her and then like a sign.
Perfect. With the hashtag too.
Yeah,
on
yeah, and then like the arrow.
Why not?
Here's a crazy thing though. Like I didn't bury my dad in Israel because it's so expensive. And I didn't realize how expensive it was.
To ship a body anywhere is very expensive.
It's expensive. My dad, this is how cheaply my dad is buried. And I would have cremated him, but my family would have like, killed me because it's like not a Jewy thing.
Oh,
either.
Yeah.
And because he never specified it, he was very unorganized. And so he's buried in a wall because that was the cheapest option.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. I've seen that.
Yeah, isn't that strange? Like, I just
like
chose,
a mausoleum?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're going to run out of like
they're going to run out of space.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in Israel, they're starting to bury people like
on top of each
horizontal
other.
Like this. Yeah. Yeah. So they go like this.
They should have been doing that the whole time.
Yeah.
They weren't thinking about that, you know. I don't know, hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange? Like, where are those people? I have no idea.
The dead people?
Yeah.
Under everything, probably.
Yeah. Oh, gross.
We've run out of room, for sure.
This whole planet is just skeletons.
It's all dead people.
It's all skeletons.
And dinosaurs at the core.
Yeah.
How creepy. Anyway.
Yeah, so that Boston Globe thing, it had me thinking because I was a journalism major in college, too.
Oh.
And the big story that I reported on was an eminent domain case about downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. That was, you know, things were changing. You had, like, murders and all this shit. I'm like,
you had it easy.
Yeah, I had it really easy. But I didn't go to school in Boston, so maybe that's why, you know, they didn't have necessarily the... Not that
there's
I did
a lot
anything
of
like
crime,
did,
yeah. There was an entire... section of the Globe that was reporters just devoted to the mafia and reporting on the mob.
Wow, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah,
I don't want
that reports under a fake name, which I was like, that's smart.
That's smart.
That's really smart.
I'd be really afraid of that position.
Mm-hmm. Now you just gave it away.
Oh, I think they know it's a fake name. I think they know.
So you said you went from Boston to New York? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, so I went from Boston when I was in school, interned at the Daily Show after my junior year. And then I went back to Boston for senior year and then graduated in December and then went to New York and was trying immediately to like, because I liked comedy and I had done comedy. I was in a sketch group in college, but I was never on stage. I just wrote. And I was like, well, yeah, like I like this comedy thing. Like maybe I'll just go to New York and either I'll get a reporting job in New York or I'll get another like TV job in New York, maybe. And then I just kept getting reporting jobs. So I like started working for Huffington Post and then was always freelancing and was always worked for Thought Catalog, worked for Daily Dot, like just kept getting reporting gigs. So I was always kind of like just a news reporter. But Thought Catalog was also like personal essay. So that's where I started writing more about myself. And then people seemed to like that. And then also was writing like I wrote like a little ebook for them and like had you could have at the time on Thought Catalog, you could sort of build like a fan base. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that. And then like Twitter started and then I had Twitter and then I had like a little following on Twitter. And I had this blog that was popular, this 100 interviews blog that I was just like when I was living in New York, that was just like a journalism blog.
Yeah.
But I also like talked about myself and my relationships and stuff on it. And, that became popular and I had some like literary agents interested and then I had a guy in LA, an agent in LA who was like, come out to visit LA. And I was like, all right. And I came and I was like, oh, this is pretty nice. And then I was dating someone who was terrible and I was like, what if we moved to LA and you stopped being terrible? And they were like, yeah, good idea. And then I moved to LA and then he never followed. And then I just stayed.
And he's still terrible, I assume.
I presume he lived in New York for like another year and a half or so. And then eventually also came out to LA, but I haven't seen him. But like it was like sort of a kick. And then I was like miserable in New York because it just was too crowded and cold and I wasn't having a good time. And then I was like, oh, but nobody who moves from New York to LA likes LA. And then when I came out here, I was like, this is great. I love it here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I've been here 3 years and I'm like, yep, this is great. I'll stay here.
So let's go back to 100 interviews. So
sure.
Do you have a favorite interview that you did?
It's so weird because when people read it and like are like, now are like, I love it. Because that was a blog I had when I was 22. Mm-hmm. So when people are like, I really love it. It's like if someone...
A different person almost.
Yeah, a different person. And also mm-hmm. like if somebody was like, I read your diary from when you were 22. And I was like, cool, what did it say?
Yeah.
Like, no.
I had a blog when I was 22 and sometimes I still get emails from it.
Yeah. And I can't believe that people... I'm like, what were my opinions? Like,
what did I say?
Yeah, what did I say?
Like pro-Trump?
Yeah. Like, were they good? Were they bad? Like, I don't know. One interesting one was this guy who had come to New York in the wake of Hurricane Katrina and had worked in New Orleans as a sommelier and then was in New York sort of like getting money for being a refugee, but like couldn't find another job and was sort of like struggling. And it was like the only time I had ever talked to anyone about like the, cause you know, you heard about it, but you heard about it as like people en masse and you never heard like individual stories unless because the media just didn't care, I guess. So there was, yeah, so this was the first time that I had heard from someone who like, just like, yep, and then I, and then all, everything washed away in the flood and my job is fucked and I came here and like, wow. Yeah, that was a really interesting, it was a good way to talk to people that you wouldn't normally like have these sort of long conversations with.
Mm-hmm.
But then the, it was also like a, just an experiment that ended up getting popular. Like I wasn't trying to, I just was like, I working at a newspaper and I was bored and I was like, okay, well I want to do a blog of, I want to write the things that I want to write. So, and that's not going to go up. Like I'm writing about movies for Huffington Post and like, they're not going to be interested in like my story about the right. guy from New Orleans.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah. Cause you're at the mercy of, much like in Hollywood, you're sort of at the mercy of like yeah. pitching to your editor and then the editor can go, good idea, or can go, we don't want to run this. Right. But once Tumblr and blogs started getting more popular, it was like you didn't need to, you didn't, much like YouTube, so right, like you exactly. just didn't need the person
you
saying
yes. You
didn't
need someone saying yes.
You yeah. could just do it.
Which I think is great for people that, I mean, for a long time I thought this was like a myth when people were like, you have to find your voice. And I'm like, what the fuck is this voice that I have to find? But the voice is really just being able to, it's this expression of things that you really want to write and you really want to express and put out there that,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, it's embarrassing. Like it's all embarrassing. Like when I had the blog, I had a lot of friends who were like, why are you writing about your life on the internet? Like, that's weird. Like that's embarrassing.
I feel like not doing that is embarrassing these
well,
days.
Well now, but this was yeah. like, I don't know. Yeah. This was like 6 years ago, let's say. And friends of mine were like, we were just starting to put things on YouTube. Like I had a comedy troupe in college and we did stage shows. And now that troupe, all they do is make internet videos.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was like, for friends of mine were like, it's so weird that you like spend all day like writing these little blogs for your blog and like, who are you? And like, you're just like sharing all these things about your life on the internet. And like, that's creepy and weird. And they like didn't like it. And then similarly, I think, with YouTube, it's the same thing. Like it's, you kind of just have to be willing to be embarrassed. I don't know. Like I had friends, I was just talking to someone about this. I had friends in college who were much funnier than me, much, much funnier than me, but they've never done anything. They've never made a video. They've never written anything. They've never put themselves out there. They've never like, and so they've just kind of fell to the comedy wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, why I like they were funnier than me. So why am I the one who, and it's just because I was like willing to be embarrassed.
I think it's more than that. I think you're willing to put yourself out there and you're willing to
yeah,
be,
yeah,
you know.
Or like willing to be like, maybe this video will be bad, but the next one will be better. Right. And just like keep going. And like, I mean, like
you kept placing bets and like the yeah. more bets you place, like one of them's going to pick up.
Yeah. Whatever. And people would make fun. And like you have people make, I mean, people in my real life, when I started making videos, made fun of me. I had like a guy from my old comedy troupe send me an email being like, you're embarrassing yourself and you ugh. Need to stop.
What?
Like, yeah. Oh yeah.
That's crazy.
And then oh, of course God. You get comments all the time. Yeah. So like you just kind of have to be willing to like be mortified constantly.
Yeah.
And like I think a lot of people like just wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like to, and I don't know why that was okay to me or like remains okay to me.
It's great. No, I think
yeah,
it helps to keep
I don't
going.
Know.
I mean, but would you consider your like YouTube, for example, was that an overnight success or was there a
no.
lot of so you failed a lot before you found what people liked or
yeah,
how?
I was making vlogs on my own that like no one cared about. And I had made like some sketches on my own that no one cared about. And Allison had made some stuff on her own that was like fine, but nobody cared. And then we made the first 5 episodes of our channel, Just Between Us. The first 5 episodes are so poorly produced and lit that they're dark. They're completely in the dark.
Yeah.
And people will still be like, I've been watching since, like, I went back and watched like the shitty ones. Like, they were shit.
The yeah. shitty ones. Oh, no.
And so it's like, but then, you know, slowly you get a production budget, slowly you get, but I mean, we've been doing it for 2.5 years, 3 years. And like, we are just like in the last year sort of able to like do what we want from it.
Mm-hmm.
But like for two years, we did it essentially for free with like some people caring, but like not enough maybe to justify doing it still.
Yeah. What happened? What changed? Was there some catalyst or is it just,
I had already time and consistency were big ones. But I had already, so when I met Allison, she had no social media and was like, why would you ever? And I had like 10,000 Twitter followers just from like being a reporter and being a writer. And I had written that book for Thought. So like people knew kind of who I was. And she always says that she remembers looking at my meeting me and then looking at my Twitter and being like, this girl is famous. And like, and I was like, no, but that's funny that you thought that. And then we were like, let's make a YouTube channel together. But I had been working on like a Nickelodeon sketch show for like kids. And she was an assistant at a management company. And then some guy who worked for BuzzFeed Video remembered my blog and like went back and was like, oh, yeah, I used to read this blog a long time ago. Whatever happened to that girl? And like went and found it and saw that I was in L.A. and was like, oh, she moved to L.A. That's interesting. And then it just so happened that like that weekend I had gone out to brunch with a friend of mine who's an actor, and his friend from summer camp had just tagged along. And she worked for that same place. She worked for BuzzFeed Video. So he was like, what would you guys think about bringing in this girl, Gabby Dunn, that I used to really love her writing, and she lives in LA now, and I don't know what she's doing, but let's talk to her. And that girl was like, oh, that's so funny. I just had brunch with that girl.
Oh. And small LA world.
Yeah. And he was
go
like,
to brunch, people.
Yeah. And he was like, and I remember at the brunch, this girl was like, oh, I work for BuzzFeed Video. And I was like, what's that? And mm-hmm. she was like, we make videos on the internet. And I was like, okay, cool. Had never heard of it. And then the two of them, because they had like sort of like seconded each other. Mm-hmm. So they brought me in, and I had already had the channel with Allison. And so I interviewed there, got the like internship there, essentially residency. And then they were like, we want to make this series of best friend videos. Do you have an actress we can cast to play your best friend? And I was like, I have a channel with this girl. Just bring her in. So we brought Allison in to be in the video. And then they were trying to cast like a whiskey taste test for like women who had never drink whiskey for the first time. And they were like, we're striking out. Like, we can't find any women who have never drank whiskey. And Allison doesn't drink.
Yeah, neither do
I. So I was like, I actually have one for you. So then that was the second video she was in. And she was really funny in it. And so then they slowly brought her on too. And then like we both were working there, and then people really liked us there and were like, oh my God, like in the comments, it would fill up with like, did you guys know that they have their own channel? And then everyone started following us on our channel. And then BuzzFeed got mad that we had our own channel, and all the subscribers and views on our videos were redirecting to our channel. And they asked us if we would reconsider having our own channel. And we said no. And then we left. And then we had to quit. Yeah.
Good.
That was fairly recently?
We quit like over a year ago.
Okay.
Was
it like a tough decision, or were you like, no, screw that?
I love to burn bridges. Like, I'm sort of like I don't care at all. And I had,
you're like Chris Christie.
That was good.
Like, here's the block bridges. But
yeah. At that point, I mean, I was 26. A lot of the people that work for BuzzFeed Video are 20, 22, you know, young. And yeah. I had had jobs before. I had been hired and fired. Like, I was not, like, no one job really had mattered to me. When I was a reporter, I was, like, sort of a mercenary. Like, whoever wanted the piece could get the piece, and I didn't really care where it ran. And then I'm still that way. Like, I'm more loyal to editors that I've worked with. But if, like, I write a lot for Fusion because my editor at Fusion is this woman that I really like. But if she moved to another publication, I understand. Just work for her.
Yeah, I have that relationship too.
And I was working for her when she worked at Talking Points Memo. And as soon as she left, I was like, bye Talking Points Memo, I'll go wherever Nona goes. And then, I was like, who cares? Allison, it was her first writing job ever. So she really cared. And it was, but it's also like, you know, you feel crazy because you're like, everyone, it's like working at Disneyland. Like, everyone's just like, this is the best place ever. And you're sort of like, is it though? Like,
parking is really expensive, guys. And like $8 for water? God.
No, I mean, not that great. It just wasn't.
There's a lot of hype, I think, within there that make it like upbeat and like everybody positive energy about this company. But I think as an outsider, it's not necessarily.
Well, if you're not handpicked by the higher ups to be a star, then you will not succeed there. And so there was like a lot of, but then there was always kind of this thing of like, well, you know, girls, like, if you have your own channel, it doesn't seem to us like you're really committed to being here. So how can we make you stars and trust to make you stars here when you could just up and leave and take it all back to your own channel at any time?
Ugh.
And we were like, so it was a lot of like weird private talks about like, just how committed are you to this place, Gabby? Like, what, why wouldn't you, like, don't you trust us? Like, why, how could we trust you if you have your own channel? Like,
it sounds like Stranger Things, like the government, like getting involved with your life.
It's Scientology. Like, yeah. It's really.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, it sounds like a cult.
Did you ever read the book, The Circle by Dave Eggers?
Yes.
So I was reading The Circle on an airplane and highlighting like crazy.
That's
and
a
just
crazy book to read on an airplane.
every other page, I was just like, this is, I've never read a better description of BuzzFeed in my life.
Yeah, I feel like that's what Herbalife is like too. Those people that like try to like, come on, I could change your life.
Yeah, and there's people that have completely sold their souls to it.
I know.
That's great, but it makes me very nervous because the whole time I would go, well, okay, but how do you even, and I had left and you know, I had been fired from jobs because they were doing mass layoffs or whatever it is. Like, I had worked at jobs before, so I was like, there's nobody safe. Like, what do you mean? You could, so we shut down the channel and we give everything to this company. And then in 2 years, the company goes under. Like, why? Like, there's no, all you have is yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you can't.
Well, plus then they own your shit when you give
that
them
was the other big thing, is that there were a couple people who later had created series for them.
Oh, a lot
and then
of them. Yeah.
Were fired. And then that series is gone.
Yeah.
And I had a series that I created for them that they owned, it was completely legal. They eventually sold it and it was like something, and I don't see any of that money, and it's all characters that I created and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then it was like an extra weird rub where like it was an LGBT series and they handed the reins of it to a straight dude. And like, it was just like this very, and I had no recourse. And so, I felt like lucky that it wasn't a bigger thing that I actually cared about that they were doing that with, you know? So like, It's just, I think, like, when you're working somewhere and you start to be like, can I give them my best ideas? Because what will they do with it? Mm-hmm. It got increasingly paranoid. Like, I just started getting more and more paranoid. And I was like, I think, and like, at the time, Allison and I had interest in, like, we had sold a television show. And the reason that we were able to sell that show was because the video that the show was based off of, that they had bought the pitch or whatever, was a video that we had done for our channel. So like, I kept thinking like, well, at the more I create for BuzzFeed, the less I'll have things later, IP later to sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like a long-term career.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Thought.
It takes away time from, I guess, your ultimate goal.
Yeah, because then what is the ultimate? Because I was always so curious working there. Like, what is the ultimate? Like, what? Yeah. Where can you go?
I when people tell me, when I'm like struggling with like, if I don't have a job for a while, mm-hmm. people are like, why don't you just do this for a bit? And I'm like, no, because then I'm like stressed out with this job, which mm-hmm. has nothing to do with what I want to do. And it takes away time from my ultimate goal. And I think that's unhealthy, too. And if I'm not happy doing that, I'm not going to, like, if it's a job that I'm happy doing and it does lead to my ultimate goal, mm-hmm. great. But if it's something completely different, that's just like easy access mm-hmm. and, you know, and it easily, like, I don't know. It's just, you have to be really smart in these kind of situations and think about what is my, because this is all creative stuff too.
And
you know?
All you have are your ideas and your intellectual property.
Exactly. And you have to be very careful.
Yeah. I would just get nervous about having less and less IP in the future that didn't involve a company, and then yeah. feeling like now I have no, because like I had friends working there that were like, hey, I want to get out, I want to work somewhere else, how can you talk to your manager for me, how can
it
I get
like
out
a hostage situation.
Yeah. And then I would go, okay, let me talk to my manager. And then I would say to the manager, these friends of mine want to leave, would you rep them? And he would go, great. Do they have any scripts or any videos that they've done that BuzzFeed doesn't own? Mm. And they would say, no.
Yeah.
And he would go, there's nothing I can do for them.
Ugh, tricky.
Yeah.
That is rough.
But it's a decision. It's some people are working within that system and doing a great job.
Yeah.
I just worry about long-term effects
right,
of that.
Right, right.
But when you're at BuzzFeed, isn't that where you came up with the concept of your podcast? Or am I wrong?
No, I came up with the concept. No, I left BuzzFeed and then I had obviously some money struggles. The podcast is bad with money. So I had, yeah, I left and I didn't have a steady paycheck and I had a lot of money issues there and I was trying to hide it from everyone. And I had always had credit card debt, but I was like, everybody has credit card debt. This is just a thing no one talks about. And then I wrote an article for Fusion because we were just making money from YouTube. And everyone I talked to was just like, yeah, it's shitty, but whatever. And I was like, why doesn't anybody talk about this? And they were like, well, and I later learned why. But so I wrote this big article for Fusion that was called Get Rich or Die Vlogging. And it was about how you make money on YouTube and how nobody's really making that much money as they say they are. And everybody's struggling and brand deals are awful. And how you could, a lot of times it was like about there's no middle class on YouTube. Like it's either... And it's either you're super rich or you're not making anything. And also that like a lot of these people that are like famous on YouTube are finding out that they can't have a regular job. Like friends of mine who, you know, take tickets at the aquarium or work at Starbucks or whatever. And fans find out what Starbucks they work at and stake out the Starbucks. Mm. Or like one of my friends works at a museum and he had a guy that like kept coming back and seeing like just like it's not. You're like now you're out in public as like a, you know,
a personality
waiter or whatever. And they're like, oh, my God, this is my wait. My friend of mine opened the article with a friend of mine, Brittany Ashley, who was a waiter at a restaurant. And she was also an actress on BuzzFeed, but she wasn't hired on to BuzzFeed. She was just freelance. And BuzzFeed threw their Golden Globes party at her restaurant. And so it was everyone there working together. Oh. And she was the waitress for it.
That's so awkward.
Yeah, and she was like, anyway, kill me. But like. So it was like, you know, about that. And then, you know, I wrote the article and I was like, this is, and it went crazy viral because it was like a thing nobody had talked about. Mm-hmm. And then immediately this company that had been working with me and Allison backed out because they were like nervous that if they worked with me, people would say, oh, she's just working for this brand for money. Like she's made it clear to everyone that all her brand deals are just for money.
Yeah.
Which fucking duh.
Right, of course.
Yeah, it's like, oh, why else? You know what? I really want to like give, you know.
I believe in Pampers.
Right. Like, so they
totally
were like.
Totally use it all the time.
So it affected. So that's why I realized why nobody was talking about it. Because that affected our ability to make money for a little bit.
I just got to say, Ed, in this week we have a sponsor to the program. Our sponsor, Audible.com. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audible.com/try now and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/try now.
You know what's more fun than riding a train?
What's that?
It's riding a train while listening to The Girl on the Train, which I did when I was on a train in Europe. Yeah, because... You know, sometimes you just want to lug around a heavy book with you. You just want to take something that's in your pocket on an app and listen to it and then get really freaked out when you leave the train because that book is really intense and scary.
So that's why Audible.com is perfect. You don't have to lug around your books.
No.
When you could close your eyes and listen to a book.
Exactly. And you can ride a train while doing it.
So how was that?
It was fabulous. But don't see the movie. Listen to the book and on Audible.
On Audible.
Get your free audiobook with a 30-day trial today by signing up to audible.com, www.audible.com/try now. That's www.audible.com/try now.
I actually like Audible.
I actually like Audible because it's like I say, you know, you could die driving and reading, but you can't die driving and listening. So what better way to stay alive?
I might be cutting that out of the...
What?
We'll do the commercial afterwards.
Okay.
But thank you. Okay. So
but
we are back with Gabby Dunn. Sorry about that. We definitely had to get that.
That was a perfect promotion. Segue.
Yes. I was just waiting for it. I couldn't wait for that perfect time.
The interesting thing, though, I think, is it's not just that no one talks about the brand sponsorships. I think people, especially in LA maybe, don't like to talk about how they make money.
Yeah.
Because it looks like LA sometimes if you just like step back for a moment. My friend from England came and she's like, does anybody work here?
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they work. It's just strange.
Yeah. Nobody has a job.
No one has a job. Everyone either is freelancing between gigs or they're like, or they have really sketchy jobs. Like they, yeah, like it's some kind of drug related thing, or it's like a underground, I mean, you know, under the table cash type deal.
I was doing Postmates for a bit, but I was always like, there was, I'm in this film called Vlogumentary that Morgan Spurlock made, that is going to be on YouTube Red soon. It's just a documentary about people who make YouTube videos that I'm one
How
of, like,
meta that it's on YouTube.
I know. I know. It was at Tribeca, and I think they were trying to sell it, and they ended up selling it to YouTube Red. But it was, it's like follows like five of us, and my whole storyline in the movie is like trying to make money, and if there's a part in it that I love that I like couldn't believe they got, because they followed me around for like a while, and you know, some of it is like very dead, and some of it is like, okay. And so they followed me for like 5 days or something, and it's me delivering Postmates, and I go into the Chipotle to get the burrito for the person, and the Chipotle guy's like, yo, you're from YouTube, like that's crazy, like freaking out, calls his friend over, is like, oh my god. And then I go outside, and the guy outside is like, can I take a picture with you, whatever, we do that. Then I get in my car, and Postmates, you have a certain amount of time to deliver the thing. So if people are like wasting your time along the way, you're fucked.
Oh, damn.
So I'm like rushing to the car, like trying to take pictures and be nice, but like rushing, get to the person's house to deliver the burrito, go into their house, deliver the burrito, leave. And I come out, and I'm like, the camera crew is waiting, and I'm just like, that guy didn't care who I was at all. Was pretty mad about his burrito. Like,
it's so strange.
Yeah.
It is.
So just like a dichotomy of like, if I go to, but it's like the age group, right? Like if I go to the Grove, it's over for me. But if I'm anywhere else, no one cares. Like, it's like weird. Or like VidCon, like YouTube has this big video convention in Anaheim, and like Allison and I are mobbed there. But then like, immediately, like afterwards, when we're like going to like the Denny's or whatever, nobody cares. Or like, it's this very weird.
I don't even know what to call it.
Yeah, because like, you're not, like famous, but not famous. Celebrity. Yeah,
like it's like famous limbo.
One of the best things was we did this tour in, for John Green for Paper Towns, for the movie Paper Towns. And John Green's a YouTuber, and he wrote the book Paper Towns. And so we did this.
Oh, my friend wrote the screenplay.
Oh, yeah.
Michael.
Oh, I met the director. But yeah, so Allison and I were on tour with them, with like all the stars of it and John, and it's a big YouTube community. So we like did a red carpet every city, and people were like screaming, and we signed autographs, and it was like we were like the fucking Beatles. And then we immediately went to like the Dallas airport, and they dropped us off with our bags, and we're like, see ya. And then we flew coach home. Like,
yeah.
It was like this very weird, like, you just are like, it's whiplash. It's whiplash.
It's very bizarre. I always tell people, though, you know, no matter, like, you're not really famous unless, like, someone's grandma knows who you are.
That's what I think.
I think,
like,
you know.
Although someone, my friend just told me that her mom told her to listen to Bad With Money. And I was like, oh my God, I've reached moms. Like,
that's a good level.
I've truly made it.
That's a really good level. But so Bad With Money is a really, it's, how many episodes are you in? Like 19, 20, somewhere around there?
No. We've 10. Right now we've done like 10.
10. Okay.
Yeah.
I have listened to the show. One of the things I really like that you do, it's kind of like a side thing. You clearly went on the street and interviewed people, and you say, you asked them two questions. What's the first question?
The first question was, what's your favorite sex position? Which everyone answered, no
immediately.
Problem.
As a
no
matter of fact, everybody in the audience
I
probably just
that.
Thought of their favorite sex
I couldn't,
position.
Like, right. Honestly.
What
anyway.
Was the second question?
How much money is in your bank account?
And how many
everyone
people?
Went, bye.
Yeah.
Do you want to know an interesting thing I did in school? When I was in college, I just took a sociology class, and I went through bank trash cans.
Ooh.
To look at stubs.
Interesting.
Of how much people had at their bank account at any time. And honestly, it made me feel a little better because some people were just as bad as me and some were worse. But it's so interesting. Like, the reason why I did it was to see people's attitude towards money. Mm-hmm. And I noticed ones that were crumpled up more were ones that had less money in them.
Yeah.
And I was like, you could just see the anger just come out of them. It was such an interesting experience. I really think everybody should just go to like some bank ATM.
That's really funny.
Dig through
actually.
It. I would do it. Like, it's really interesting and eye opening. And I remember seeing one account that had like $900,000 in it. And I've never seen that on like
a piece of paper.
That's how I feel, yeah.
Like, it was just, it felt like, oh, do I touch, am I allowed like to touch this paper?
That one was just placed lightly right on top of the garbage can.
Crazy. With the guy's, like, name and phone number. Right, like, exactly. Ladies, I've never, it's a weird time to be doing the podcast because I have literally always been in the red, like, always had debt, like, never, because I was just like, and my boyfriend is, it grew up wealthy and has never had that problem. So he had said one time, like, if I didn't have money, I would do all day was just think about how to get money. And I was like, okay, but
I think I heard that on the podcast.
Think about if you've never had, like, it's normal. Like, it's so normal. It's 28 years worth of normal where I'm just like, why would you? Like, I'm never going to have it. So why would I try to have it?
Yeah.
And like, he just couldn't fathom the way that I thought about it. And I was, and then, like, you know, or being like, well, I have $5 in my bank account, so what am I going to get for $5? And he'd be like, what are you talking? You do something with that, or like try to like make that more money. And I'd be like, why? Yeah. But so now, like, I'm in a place in my career where I'm like getting money in and like having maybe the most money I've ever had at one time. Every time I get like a new amount, it's the new most money that I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And but it's like, I don't know what to do with it. Like, I'm literally just putting it away in an account that I'm like not looking at. Cause I'm like, I don't know, like, get it away from me. Like, I don't know what to, like, one thing that he made me do was pay off my credit cards.
Yeah.
First.
That's smart. Yeah.
Which I was like, why? Like, just now I know that I can. So why do I have to? And he's like, get rid of it. And then like, still, I have an auto loan that I haven't paid off that he's like, you should work on that next. But like, it's just this, like, I just got the episode that just came out. I just got an accountant. And so I'm like, I went to him with like an accordion folder full of papers and receipts and tax returns and checks and just like everything that I've like kept for the last 2 years. And I just like went to his office and was like, here you go. This is for you.
Yeah, that's what I did with my accountant, basically.
Yeah.
But I have a, because when I had like probably like $200 when my dad died.
Yeah.
And actually he died with like negative money in his account. It was very strange.
Yeah.
But he had brain cancer. So he was like spending money on crazy shit, mm-hmm. not knowing what he was doing.
Right. Yeah.
But afterwards I got money from like a different, I didn't even know he had a different account.
Yeah.
And like in different country, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden I had more money, not like a ton, but I had more money than I ever seen in my life, like in my account.
Right.
So the first thing I did was I got a financial advisor.
That's what I've I got an accountant business manager. I was like, someone else deal with this because I like can't.
And like it's interesting because I feel like I'm not a good client because I don't make that much. As he has clients that are like,
right, I'm a terrible client.
Yeah.
My business manager goes to me, I was like, are you okay to be on the podcast? And he was like, yeah, I've been in things before. My client Joaquin has put me in stuff. And I was like, so badly wanted to be like, Joaquin who? Just to be like, because I was like, I knew he meant Joaquin Phoenix.
Of course.
But I was like, I knew that he was setting me up to be like, oh, wow. Like, you work with Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
But instead, I wanted to just be like, which Joaquin? Do I know him?
Joaquin
like,
who?
Yeah. But he was just like, he's like,
kind of intimidating. I feel like I'm seriously like their worst client. Like,
yeah,
oh,
I'm definitely the worst client. Absolutely. This guy works like, I got set him, I share a manager with John Oliver. And this is like John Oliver's business manager. And
oh
I was
my
like,
gosh.
Good day to you. Like this will, here's all my crumbled receipts. Enjoy. And he like deals with people much bigger than me.
Yeah, he's doing, how strange.
I think he's doing somebody at the management office a favor. And then also part of me
that.
Is like, wants to be like, Dan, do you believe in me? You believe in me so hard, Dan. You think
I
will be a worthwhile client?
I have a feeling that all of these people just like to see young people come in. Cause a lot, I know people that are in their 40s that don't do that, you know, and they just don't have their shit together. Like that was my parents. They
right.
That.
That's what I'm worried about all the time. Like my student loan stuff is so, separated out that I like know about some of the loans but I don't know about all of them, and I like try to get my mom to like tell me where the other ones are.
Do you know your credit score?
No. How do you check it?
Go online.
Oh, yeah, boy.
Get it online.
All right.
Mine's not that bad.
What's a good one?
Anything over.
Wait, I remember I got an apartment years ago. I went and got an apartment in New York 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and I think what's a good credit score?
Like everything.
I'm going to disappoint you in a second. Well, I can tell you what a good credit score is because I worked in the mortgage industry. It's 680
or above.
680 or above. 720 is excellent credit.
I had a good one. I had like a 700.
Okay, so here's the only kind of thing about that. I was in the mortgage industry, and one day one of my friends calls me up. He's like, dude, I was going to rent a house, but fuck that. I have excellent credit. That's what the guy told me. So I checked his credit, and he had like 500s. Mm. And he's like, what the hell? Well, it turns out there's a renter's like credit check.
Oh,
and then there's
fuck.
An actual credit score credit check. That
so you think the one that I saw was just like a renter's
It's possible.
One?
So there's Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. Those are the three. And you right. can get your credit report for free from them once a year, I'm pretty sure. That's how you want to check. 680 or above is good. 720 or above is excellent credit.
All I know is that I had so many medical bills that I did not pay. So I was really scared.
Oh, yeah. So medical many. Bills.
So many.
But they don't count unless they take you to collections, right?
They did go to collections. Okay. I didn't want to pay my medical bills because I saw that both my parents had so many medical bills and they died. So I'm like, I'm not paying that. And no one's running after me. So I don't have to pay mine.
That's yeah, how I feel. If I don't open if I don't open the mail, I don't have to know about it.
Look at my mail. I don't want to open it.
Oh my God. Yeah. The mail. That's been a relatable theme on the podcast is just avoidance of the mail.
I don't know if it's even reliable these days anymore. Everyone emails and everyone calls. And
I just voted by mail. I just voted by mail. And I was like, wait, I put it in the mailbox. And then I went, how do I even know that this is getting counted?
Yeah.
We should all vote by app.
That's what I was just telling Guy before we started. I was we should vote by app.
So two things. One, I voted by mail also. I got an email saying, hey, we got your ballot.
You did?
And do you want to do an exit poll and tell us kind of who you voted for?
Oh, so maybe I'll get that.
So they do confirm kind of who you vote for.
I feel better then.
Yeah. What was the other?
Oh, they confirm who you, they tell you who you voted for?
No, they ask you if you will tell who you voted for in an exit poll. So they can kind of confirm.
I checked 5,000 times. I was like, okay. So it's this, so it must be this, so it's it. And then I would like put it down and then I would go, okay, let me look again. It was definitely Hillary, right? Like I just kept checking.
But it's all rigged, right?
Hillary, marijuana, boom, done.
Yeah.
Send it in the mail, put on two stamps, it's good.
Yeah, don't make porn stars wear condoms, like, duh, like just doing all the LA ones.
Why do we not care about porn? I mean, it's funny that I did the same thing. I'm like, porn stars don't need condoms.
No, but my little sister is not an actress, but she works in the adult industry on the business end. And she was like, told me all these things about like, what to vote for, and that I was like, okay. She posted on Facebook about it, and I was like, look at you, so political in your job.
Yeah.
In your adult industry job.
I saw a sign for it. It was like, well, let's say it's like 62. Pornographers want you to vote yes on 62.
No,
like,
they want you to vote no on Prop 60.
Oh, is that what? Okay.
Because believe me, she's been like all about it. Because I was like, I don't know anything, and you seem to be in this industry, so I'll take your word on the industry you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Let's talk about your YouTube show a little bit.
Sure.
Is it Just Between Us, or did you guys have like a longer name now, don't you? Am I?
Oh, it's Just Between Us, but we started doing like a series called Is This What You Want?
Is This What You Want?
But yeah, no, Just Between Us is what the channel's called.
So it's you and your best friend, Allison Ruskin?
Raskin.
So there's kind of like a dichotomy there where Allison grew up not poor, struggling at all. She never had to struggle with money.
No.
Is there any kind of, seriously, because... There is on my, like, is there any kind of animosity is the question. And I'll say what I said to Eden before you came in. You know, I was listening and she was like, oh, I never had to struggle and I feel bad about that. I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Feel bad about never having to struggle.
Well, that's her fear. Her fear is that people are like, fuck you.
I mean, guys thinking it.
I'm
sure she's a wonderful person. Don't get me wrong. But that's the first thought in your head when you don't grow up with a lot of money. You know, like, oh, you feel bad because you have money? Like, that's whatever.
She has a lot of guilt about not having struggled, which is weird because Garrett, my boyfriend, also didn't struggle and he doesn't feel really that bad about it. Like, he understands that it's like he's lucky, but he doesn't feel like guilt that I think she feels. I don't know, it's definitely been like difference of how to handle things, like a difference of, I think it comes up a lot in like reliance on family, like mm-hmm. If she has a problem, she will call her parents immediately. And that doesn't occur to me. Like, I'm like, why would they know? Like, why would they know more than me? But it's also a thing where I'm the middle child, but I'm like the oldest. I have an older half brother, but I'm the oldest like in my house. Like, he was 15 years older than me, so he was already gone pretty much.
Yeah.
And Allison is the youngest. And so I think my sister very much would call my parents and be like, you need to fix this. Which, like, good luck. But also, like, And I would never, it just wouldn't. So I think there's like a figure it out yourself versus figure it out like with a bunch of people mentality. Yeah. I don't know. It definitely has brought up, she very much worries about people being like, fuck you. And like, it is interesting because we shoot in her apartment, which is a condo that her parents own, which she, if I tell people that, she gets very embarrassed. But people know. I mean, it's not a secret.
Yeah.
Because people will comment and go, this apartment is huge and beautiful. Like, who lives in this? And then if it's like, you know, it's Allison's place, then they go, whoa, like, how do you live there? Like, it naturally comes up that, like, obviously it's not her place.
Yeah.
But then Garrett's sister also lives in a condo in New York City that her parents own. So it's like a life that I don't understand. But I don't know. It's also funny because I lived in New York, right? So like Garrett's sister lives in New York and they're like, oh, you guys both lived in New York. And I'm like, she lives in a like beautiful condo in Midtown.
Wow.
Like we did not live in the same New York.
Yeah.
Like I lived in a
I shared a room when I lived in New York.
Like, right. I was like, we could have both lived in New York for years. We would have never run into each other. I was not going to the bars that she, I was not like, you can,
you were not on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah. Like you can live in the same city and just have completely different experiences of that city.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that I think would have had Allison and I not both been in comedy, maybe would have happened with us.
Yeah. So there's no animosity. It doesn't sound like
no,
there is.
Not
You're
really.
Just like, oh, that's a different perspective in a sense.
We respect that we're different. Like, you know, she'll spend the weekend on the west side, and if I cannot leave the east side, I'm happy to do that. And that's like for those not in LA, east side is a very hipster area, and west side is a little bit more expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
And now you have like 700,000 plus subscribers to your YouTube channel. That's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that you get paid on YouTube and your podcast. You're making money from advertising.
From ads,
are those
yeah.
Is that your main source of income right now?
No. Well, yes and no. I mean, there's stuff that we haven't like announced or can say a lot about, but we've sold television shows. We work in
awesome.
Television, so we make money on script deals or nothing that's gone. Unfortunately, but we've sold a bunch of television shows and we make money on the script deals for those, right? And then the network passes and it's like, whatever, we still get the money.
Isn't that kind of cool though that you guys can still sell shows and make money on it?
We would love for one to go.
Yeah.
But
the nature of the business.
It's been very interesting to have all of these things happen and then like as soon as you're like happy about it, it's done. But like you
That's
still.
That's why I don't like to announce anything.
We
ever.
Never, I mean, we haven't announced ever anything, but also because I think our fans would be upset. Like I think not just that they would be disappointed that it didn't go, but I also think that they would perhaps, my theory is, lash out at the network.
Right.
That chose not to pick.
Like, oh, we have a pilot with NBC.
And then the network
Yay,
is
oh,
mad.
We didn't get it. Ah, fuck NBC.
Fuck you, NBC. Like, how it's not NBC.
Right.
But, you know, like, fuck you. How dare you not pick up our beloved? Because they feel like they take it personally.
I know. Yeah.
So, which is nice, but I wouldn't.
You don't want the animosity with any network.
Yeah, I think they would be mad. And then, because we get a lot of comments being like, why don't you guys have a TV show? And I so badly want to be like, why don't you ask this network that question?
I know.
But, like,
I
you
get
can't.
That all the time, yeah.
And then we, you know, we're working on a book. There's like a lot of stuff where like we get money from other places. But yeah, so I mean, I'm sort of coasting on book money right now.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like you being honest about that because I think that's a thing. I really want to ask people how they make money because I think a lot of people are very shy to admit that. So
yeah. I mean, the YouTube channel doesn't make that much money, but it certainly pays my rent every month. And then from there,
that's awesome.
The other stuff is like, okay.
You have to hustle.
And now do you and Allison write everything that you do on the channels?
We write it. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just you two. You don't have any other writers,
no,
but you have
no.
some kind of production crew for the actual channel.
No other writers. Everything is written by us. And then we give writers credit, like which of us wrote it or if we wrote it together. And then, we have a crew. We have three dudes that work for us and we pay them.
So you don't run it by anybody? It's never like, oh yeah, let's ask Steve if he thinks this is funny.
Or no, never.
Just
I mean,
you guys.
Sometimes Garrett will read a script and my boyfriend will read a script, but, and we'll be like, this is like, you should put the dog in this, like whatever his thoughts are.
Right.
And then sometimes mostly I'll go like, that's funny. Or like, that's not, but, or I'll run It's more of like, I'll see what he laughs at. Like, I'll have him read it, and then what he laughs at, I'll like mark it down, and then I'll go back to Allison and be like, he laughed at this, he didn't laugh at this, like we should write that, you know, mostly like a laugh-o-meter. But yeah, no, we're very careful to make it that we write everything. On my personal channel, I have my own channel, No Fun Gabby Dunn, that I update very infrequently. But on my personal channel, I've acted in things, and then it's been written by a friend of mine, and I'll give them credit on the thing. But because the channel has 50,000 subscribers, like my friend will be like, can we throw it up on your channel? Cause more eyeballs will see it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So on that channel, I'm more open to stuff written by other people, but on Just Between Us, it's very strictly me and Allison, so that we don't ever have to deal with like paying people out or whatever.
But do you guys have creative arguments?
All the time.
You do.
All the time.
What do you do in that case? Or are there ever cases where it's like, is there still something that you really thought was going to be funny, but she's like, nope, don't want to do that?
All the time. Every second of my life.
So how do you deal with that? Does it just drive you? Like, does it put a wedge in the friendship ever?
Yeah, sometimes. It does. Yeah.
Like, I'm not calling her tonight. Fuck that.
Yeah, we argue a lot. I mean, it's a marriage.
Right.
It's like a total marriage. It's funny because none of it, like, we don't talk about it on the channel. We don't talk about it on social media or like anything like that. So it's very funny to get like tweets being like, oh my God, you guys are best friend goals. And we're like not speaking to each other that day.
Right.
But it is always like, to me, the arguments are so minuscule but like they get blown up. Like it's never... Like sometimes I have to go, we're really fighting right now because you want to make this particular penis joke that I don't want to, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's
you
really
have to break it down. Essentially.
That's like, if you break down the argument, we're like, just for the record, one of us is threatening to walk from the channel because of a casting decision. You know what I mean? Like
right.
Just to clarify, like the escalation has become, you know, like
deconstruct the whole dilemma. It's not a big deal.
It's never anything.
But in the end, though, having to then do that thing where you were like, oh, I didn't want to do this now.
I mean, we have wildly different priorities. She is very jokes driven, very like joke, 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 joke. It has to be jokes and like laughs per minute and like is very and she went to school for screenwriting. So she's very into structure and plot. And I am more character driven. I'm very into like what's in their hearts, like how do these people feel about each other, like whatever. And that clashes often. I was reading out loud to her some article about Jill Soloway, and it was like talking about Soloway directing her Amazon series.
I think I know which article this is.
And it was like, yeah. Soloway called the crew together and like had them all do a meditation and was like, how are we going to feel on set today? And like, we're not going to hit our marks. And like, everyone's just going to like, I'm going to ask you guys to like do what you feel. And then we'll film that. And then from there, like I'll do the blocking based on like what you do in the moment or whatever. And I was reading it being like, this is incredible. I love this. And Allison, I was reading it out loud and she was like, fuck that. And was like, thought it was like horrible.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's just like, we're reading the exact same like paragraph about how to do things. And my response was like, this is great. And her response was, I would murder everyone on that set.
Everyone does things differently.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know,
so it's a lot of, yeah, we could not be more different in terms of working style or what's important to us or anything, which comes up a lot.
If somebody's never seen your YouTube channel, is there a specific episode you think that they should watch that they would like? This one everybody loves.
Everyone seems to really enjoy Don't Read the Comments, which is a very meta sketch about us filming a sketch. And we get so caught up in filming this in the comments on the sketch that we can't finish filming the sketch. And people seem to really enjoy that one because you don't need to like necessarily know us.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one called Is She Gay that people really like, which is me trying to figure out if this girl that I'm interested in is gay. It's nice because the sketches do a lot better than the question show. So mm-hmm. we have like a question show on Mondays and then a sketch show on Thursdays. And the sketches, and it's like YouTube is not typically the place for scripted comedy.
Yeah.
Vloggers are sort of like the kings and queens of that place. And so it's nice that our channel is so popular and also like a show, or like a writing showcase.
Yeah, you're not, it's not just like, oh
yeah,
question answer.
Yeah, it's like really like when, and our fans, it's nice to see that like a lot of our fans will take the time to see like who wrote this episode and the writing was really good, and they'll say stuff about, you know, particularly like appreciating the production value, like they get really into it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So how about with your podcast, Bad With Money? Is there an episode? Because I listened to a few of them. One of them was, what is a stock?
Yeah,
and
I
was a stockbroker at some point. So I'm like, oh, you don't even think about people not even knowing what a stock is. That's a,
you
it's
were
ownership.
A stockbroker? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
You've had too many jobs I don't know about. That's crazy.
I've done a lot of weird shit.
Weird shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
What is a stock was a great one, yeah. With Sally Krawcheck from Elevest, which is a financial investment company for women. And that was really cool. It was just talking about financial literacy and independence as fourth wave feminism, which I love. And then the Roxane Gay episode, everyone seemed to really enjoy. She's a writer, and we talked a lot about race and money. And Lex, I don't know, there's been, I mean, subtle, like, right? So it's a money podcast, but I am me. So subtly, it's like a very queer feminist podcast. So like the Lexi Alexander episode about sexism in Hollywood was like a people really seem to enjoy it. I would say those three have been the big ones. And then the pilot people really liked.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one that you actually, like I said,
Interview my parents.
There's
interview.
Confrontation, folks.
I think Allison's in that one.
Yes, she is. Yep.
Yeah, she is.
Garrett shows up in the second one, which I think that interview is cute. He tries so hard.
That has to be weird too. Like talking money with the boyfriend has to be a little awkward. No,
I threw all my cards in, which was like, I was like, and it's all terrible. Here you go. Which like he's like you. I mean, it did not occur to him that people wouldn't have basic financial knowledge.
Yeah.
He couldn't believe it. So, yeah, so it's interesting coming from both sides. We have an episode coming up with Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher that's more about, like, couples and, like, because they're married to each other. So it's about, like, being a couple and working together in the industry and also, like, how do you deal with money? Do you merge your accounts when you get married? What do you do? Like, so that one's coming up next week.
Awesome. From personal experience, I think you should have one, but what happens when your parents die?
Yeah,
and then money gets transferred, and money gets locked, and then
that
you don't
would be
know.
A great one.
And then you don't know how to get the money to you because banks don't really believe you all the time, and they think that you have other siblings, so they don't give it to you.
Are you an only child?
It's complicated. That's why I have a half sister on my mom's side who's like 15 years older. She's
right,
40.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like 44, 45.
Got that older half sibling,
which she doesn't talk to me because of this issue, because of like weird issues with
family
banks.
And money is terrible,
very strange, and there's different laws like in California, but in different countries too, as far as what happens when someone dies,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then money gets like does it get transferred? Some places it's super easy, and for 4 years, like my dad had an account in Belgium that I did not have access to. Like, it sat there, but I had to hire a lawyer in Belgium to get it out.
Huh.
It's like very complicated.
Yeah.
Like it's,
that's fascinating.
Yeah. And I'm like, why? This is crazy. Like this should not be like,
I'm gonna write that down.
I always tell people I'm thinking of writing a book about it. I'm not sure.
Oh, you should.
I always tell people if you think living is expensive, the cost of dying is so much more expensive.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And then again, like, just like I told you with the funeral stuff, it was so expensive that I took the cheapest one because I just couldn't afford. I'm like, I can't afford $20,000 for plot of land.
Funerals are a real scam.
They're total. It's, oh, well, I have a, yeah. I could go days about how scammy they are. But anyway.
I think we're at that point, yes, of the show that we have one more question for you, which
is, sure.
Do you have a favorite charity?
Do I have a favorite charity? Yeah, the LA LGBT Center. Why?
Tell me what the LA LGBT Center does.
They put on events for LGBTQ people. They do a lot of, I haven't used their services, but I've heard they have healthcare services.
I think they have a hotline.
Yeah, they have a hotline that you can call, suicide stuff. But also, yeah, like I'm fascinated by, I have to check out more, but I heard tale of like really actually good like healthcare services, mammograms and stuff.
Oh,
like,
great. Not that I need.
Awesome. Gynecological stuff I've heard.
We're giving them $100 in your name.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, of course.
That's so LA great.
LGBT
I feel like
Center.
People don't listen to the end of podcasts, so
no
one knows
I had
to do
no
that.
Idea.
Well, at the very end, yes.
Every episode we donate.
And we put the link up in the bio so like of the podcast, so that
everybody
be up there.
Else can contribute.
Oh,
as
that's
well
great.
As links to your podcast and to your YouTube, so everybody go listen and watch Gabby Dunn. Thank you so much for being here
of
today.
Of course, thank
I'm
you for
up.
Having
we really
me.
Really appreciate it, and thank you everybody for listening.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.